Well, diggle, 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 dear listener. Welcome to the Good Trash Genre Cast. And we, the UCO Film Society, are gathered once again to discuss the movies that you will never discuss in the course of taking a film studies course. Today we are gathered together in the swanky, lovely, homey furnishings of the Stewart House.
Thank you.
Mr. Dalton Stewart, it is break, and we are not going all the way to Edmond to do this.
Absolutely not.
That's crazy talk.
This is a swanky joint.
It is. Let's do some introductions. My name is Dustin Sells. I'm a grad student in 20th and 21st Century Studies at the University of Central Oklahoma, hoping to graduate in May. To my right, sir, please introduce yourself.
As always, I am Dalton Stewart, and for this month, I am not a sociology major. I'm just staying at home as often as I possibly can.
Good on you, sir. And to my left.
I am Arthur Gordon, and I am slowly initiating myself into the Sons of Anarchy Motorcycle Club Redwood Original, a.k.a. Sam Crow.
Men of Mayhem, son.
Excellent, excellent. Today we're going to be talking about the movie Gremlins, if you didn't guess from our earlier introduction. But before we do that, we have a little feedback to cuss and discuss with you all. And so, Mr. Dalton Stewart, if you'd bring that to the fore, please.
Well, on the Twitter, at Brigham Cole informed us quite firmly that his name is not Mr. Nakatomi. We're racists. His name is Mr. Takagi. And we should be ashamed of him.
Nakatomi Tower, though.
It is Nakatomi Tower, but that was not Mr. Nakatomi. That was Mr. Takagi. And we should be ashamed of ourselves.
Either way, he was a disposable character.
Completely.
Nobody cares.
Forgettable disposable character. I'm afraid that is correct.
He is right, though. And we appreciate the correction because we like to be as right as often as we possibly can.
And we love to be corrected and shamed on air.
I enjoy it. I mean, that's basically what most of my life is built around, is positive shaming.
But unlike Marvel Comics, there will be no prize in the mail for you, sir. However, if we did that, you would get one.
We would. That's all we've got, is just telling us how silly we are.
Excellent!
Oh, wait, sorry, there is one more thing. I had Brigham Cole do some fact-checking for us, I apologize. Andy Dick is, in fact, not Jewish. However, he does back up my assertion that he is a terrible person because he once publicly called Howard Stern a, quote, hook-nosed Jew.
Well, that's not nice.
So, yes, Andy Dick is a terrible person and a Gentile.
And a Gentile and anti-Semitic and obviously a perfect person to have in an anti-Semitic movie like The Hebrew Hammer.
So Dustin wins.
Yes, excellent. Good to hear that.
Thank you, Brigham.
Coming in from the Facebook, we've got Nathan W. He says, regarding The Hebrew Hammer, watched 15 minutes, got bored, fast forwarded a little, watched 5 more minutes, then turned it off. That one goes in the trash. My sentiments exactly, Nathan.
Nathan should have followed my advice and had somebody who watched it look up the more amusing parts on YouTube.
But let's move on. Let's talk about what we're doing this week, and that's Gremlins. Before we can do that, though, we need a synopsis. That way the listener can kind of know what's going on with the movie and be more familiar with said film. Mr. Dalster, you're making that puzzled face.
Who's going to do that for us? I don't know.
I think maybe we should have the voice of the cinema.
Yeah?
Mr. Arthur Gordon, could you do that, please?
Figaro, Figaro. A boy inadvertently breaks 3 important rules concerning his new pet and unleashes a horde of malevolently mischievous monsters on a small town.
Malevolently mischievous? That's a tongue twister.
That's some alliteration there.
There was 3 M's in a row.
That is fantastic.
4 if you count small. I kind of do.
All right, well, there you go. It's Gremlins. We all saw this when we were kids. Everyone sees it when they're a kid. And
probably too early.
I would say, yeah, there's a good chance too early.
I don't like it.
You're like, this movie's all cute and funny. Look, Gizmo. Gizmo's so cute now.
Gizmo's
My kids watched this with me. My youngest is terrified.
Because
as it turns out, the movie's quite scary.
Does he now know that anytime a older Chinese man tells him to do something, to just do it without asking why?
Well, it prepares him for the invasion.
Oh my God. Why would you say that? Listener!
Red Dawn!
Dear listener! Oh, well, that makes slightly more sense. Dear listener, Dustin Sells is not a conspiracy theorist, nor is he a doomsday prepper. The Good Trash Genre Cast has nothing but love for our neighbors to the east.
Though I am going to wait to edit this month's or week's Good Trash Genre Cast, because if the world does end tomorrow, I'm not going to put out the effort.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Yeah, this very well may be the unaired final episode of Good Trash Genre Cast.
Per the end of the world tomorrow, Friday.
Pending our apocalypse in less than 24 hours.
Yep. But let's go ahead and do what we always do. Let's talk about the thumbs up, thumbs down. I've already spoken a little bit about it, but and I'll continue and then we'll do some analysis thereafter. I would say it's a great movie, a lot of fun. I'm nothing wrong. Everything seems to be right on. I would say that the bar scene with Phoebe Cates and the various sundry rogues gallery of gremlins is long.
It runs long. It really does.
It plays long.
It's funny.
The bits are all good. But
they're solid, yeah.
Joe Dante should have been a little bit more disciplined, perhaps, on that. That's probably all I can say critical about anything. I mean, obviously, the Phoebe Cates terrible Santa story forced, I think it's safe to say. We know why they're doing that. I think in a peril situation where you have monsters that are going to destroy and devour the couple in question, the fact they're a couple is enough emotional connection, and that extra beat was perhaps unnecessary. Now, that's the only thing bad I've got to say. Everything else was fun. I mean, enjoyed it, you know, rules and whatnot. I have more things to say as far as what's going on with the movie, but yeah, thumbs up. That's definitely what I would give the movie. To my left, Arthur, what do you think?
I'd say it's a solid thumb up. You know, it is a fun movie. Maybe the pacing's off and it kind of, you lose interest a bit. But overall, it's a solid movie and I laughed a bit. And I think I can appreciate it more now than when I was little. And it is a very interesting movie now that you can sit down and actually watch it and understand everything that's happening. But I approve of this movie.
Excellent. His name is Arthur Gordon. He approved this film. Mr. Dalton Stewart.
This is the third viewing for me of this film. And I actually think it's the weakest. I think my peak viewing for this was about 5 years ago. It was my first I saw it in childhood, as I assume most of us did, and I watched a few years back. And I think that was the most enjoyment I've ever gotten out of this film. I agree with Arthur. There's some real weird pacing issues going on. The movie doesn't get going until about 50 minutes in, and I just think that it's overly long, the setup. I really do. I also don't understand why Dad's set up as the narrator. That bothered me. His dad is a cursory character at best in this film. And it's weird that he's got the bookends of this film to me. I don't know if anybody else had that feeling. Mm-hmm. Just found it odd. I actually do like the Santa story, though, Dustin. That's probably, for me, one of the best laughs in the entire movie. Because it's this tragic story.
Best laughs?
Hold on.
It is kind of funny.
The story is tragic.
What?
The story is tragic. And then Phoebe Cates gets this look on her face. Beat. And that's how I learned Santa Claus isn't real. It's just like this darkly, it's kind of,
I think it was a bit tongue-in-cheek.
I think it really was meant to be a bit tongue-in-cheek. I really do.
You guys are soulless monsters.
That's probably fair.
We're not reading into it, man. That is a comic beat if I've ever seen one. Because her face goes from anguish to complete deadpan in about a beat. And I don't think that's bad acting. I think that is purely born out of a desire to get a really dark laugh.
I think perhaps it's because it's an awful line and she had to say it.
I really think it's a hilarious
and I
line.
Think it took that much effort for her to get through.
But that's part of the problem of this movie, I think, is we're almost, almost an hour into the film before it gets particularly funny or scary. And I think that's a real problem for a horror comedy.
Yeah, it's not really until the gremlins show up, the mass gremlin show up that it begins.
Well, it was I checked the time right when the first gremlin hatched. It was right at 50 minutes. Right when they killed the black guy, which,
trope alert.
That's how you can tell it's the 80s, right? And that's when it started getting both a little scary in parts and really funny. Mm-hmm.
It's a children's horror film.
Oddly, yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, you called it a horror comedy earlier, and I would generify it to children's film. Just one of the very few rare children's horror films.
Well, I was responsible for that, and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom are collectively responsible for the PG-13 rating. And honestly, it's not that violent of a movie, but yeah, there's definitely some really, it's not graphically violent, but there's definitely some pretty horrific things that happen to people.
PG-13 might have given me pause for my 5-year-old, so yeah. There's that.
Yeah. Your 5-year-old watched this?
Yes.
What a wonderful father.
I was 5 when I watched it.
I was probably 6 or 7, yeah.
And so, you know, I've learned to not to judge based on that because I was that age.
Because the NPAA is terrible at their job.
There is that. And so I am going to have to think a little bit more thoughtfully about what I allow my kids to watch as they get older. My oldest hadn't seen Gremlins, so he was, you know.
Into it, yeah.
Yeah, he's 8. So no worries.
But that's a perfect age for this film, I think. I think 8's a great age for this film.
But yes, it turns out quite scary. But I say it to say this, is it was targeted at an audience that was probably too young to view the film.
Which is problematic.
Mm-hmm. I think it goes back to the rating thing.
Yeah, I think that's part. I really love the bit where the gremlin gets toast in the microwave, which apparently Roger Ebert took objection to, thinking children would try it on their family pets. People are stupid. I'm sorry.
I'm sure it's based off an old urban legend anyway.
About it is. It is. Why would you? And the what is the equivalent between nuking an evil gremlin and nuking your family dog?
Unless it's an evil family dog.
Exactly.
Joey.
It's not okay.
Arthur has beckoned for my family's pet to come into the room at this moment.
Oh, no.
Well,
let's do some analysis,
let's get
shall
it,
we? I mean, we're talking about it now. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what do you bring to the table?
One of the things that I found very interesting kind of from the get-go, and I talked about it last week in regards to Skyfall and the intertextual quotations of film and how movies cite other movies. And there are quite a few here in this film.
There are.
From the get-go, the voiceover of the father in Chinatown is a throwback maybe to not only Chinatown, but film noir as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Blade Runner.
Moving on, we introduce Mrs. Deagle, who is...
The Wicked Witch of the West.
Straight out of The Wizard of Oz.
Every terrible elderly woman ever captured on film.
Rooted back to The Wicked Witch. Yeah.
Well, she's got this whole "I'll get you, my pretty bit."
That's true.
Trying to get her dog.
Tonal inflections, costuming, the dog.
And when she's finally killed, she's cast up a whirlwind of the staircase, circular staircase, and out the window. Just
mean
like
old broad.
Wizard of Oz.
Nice for cats, though.
She loves those cats.
My wife didn't actually realize it was the same character because she was so nice to her cats.
Yeah.
When we were looking at it the other day.
She's really sweet in that scene because... cats are better than people.
It is interesting.
Fun fact, all of her cats are named after currency.
That is true.
Oh, man.
She's an evil, evil, evil money
capitalist. Did you catch the line?
Well, she's Ebenezer Scrooge.
Did you catch the line at the end where it talks about her death and it mentions her husband was like...
an embezzler or something?
Embezzler,
yeah.
Was convicted embezzler. I thought that was great.
Then with the fathers at the science expo, we get Robbie the Robot, Forbidden Planet.
Yeah.
And then we have a time machine, which is actually propped from a show called Time After Time, sorry, Malcolm McDowell. And so there's some more of those quotes, and those are kind of funny. The initial Robbie is kind of quick. And then the time machine I love because we get a shot of him talking on the phone, time machine in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Cut away, cut back, time machine's gone, smoke, and there are char marks. And the time machine is gone.
And he's talking about how the competition's a lot rougher than he thought it would be.
Aliens, obviously, the eggs.
Yes.
The gremlin eggs.
They're pretty much identical to the facehugger eggs from Alien.
And they also bear a certain similarity to their opening to the Invasion of Body Snatchers.
Yes.
Well,
I think they represent on TV.
It's the blob.
Is that the blob that they show?
This is the blob that they show, I think.
No, it's Invasion of Body Snatchers.
Okay, my bad.
We get a reference of H.G. Wells' The War of the Worlds reading, the broadcast,
right,
on the radio. And finally, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, when Stripe's trying to kill
Billy with the chainsaw.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, let me continue with this, because that was what I was going to bring as well. There's another, just a few more additional ones to add. One of them being Dawn of the Dead, when they're running their way through the department store because of the zombie horde that they're facing.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I mean, the most in-your-face reference is to Snow White and Seven Dwarves, just because that's what's on the telly.
That's so funny.
Or
that
theater,
scene
I mean,
is so perfect.
Yeah.
I really love that scene.
And finally, when Stripe dies in the end, spoiler alert...
the bad guys lose.
The bad guys lose in the kids' horror film. I know it's shocking. When he dies and his bones are all melting, it's very reminiscent of the death of Dracula in Horror of Dracula, Chris Lee's death. And so
I was kind of reminded of Hellraiser there.
Mm-hmm.
I think this predates Hellraiser, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it does.
But that same kind of imagery, the special effects there being used.
The movie, I mean, you know, what Arthur's picking up on, obviously, intertextuality is a huge part of what's going on in the movie. And I think it's one of the problems of it is that those movies that it is referencing had something to say. Forbidden Planet is talking about the violent nature of human beings. Invasion of the Body Snatchers is talking about the Red Scare. Horror of Dracula is talking about the negative aspects of repressive Victorian sexuality. And then the blob scene is the inside the sheriff's office when he's... No, seriously, out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A complete pull-off of Steve McQueen in the blob. That's talking, again, about the youth culture and its involvement in the world and its knowing which way the wind blows at the times. Gremlins fails to say anything, though.
Are you saying this is a Frankenstein's monster of a movie with no soul?
Perhaps I am. Go on, sir.
I'm just giving you a title.
Right. Yeah, I think there is that, and that's part of what the movie lacks. It's fun. It's great popcorn movie. But unlike what good genre film does, which is make some sort of social commentary statement, that's why you use all those generic tropes. Gremlins just uses them and revels in its cleverness. And I think that's about all I can say for it, you know.
And
far
I think
as
that's
analysis.
Where I'm ready to pick it up. I will say that it's not very successful, but the thing I picked up most from it while watching, and it wasn't until the very end, the whole time I was equally trying to figure, I was like, what are you trying to say, Gremlins? What are we talking about here? Are we talking about fear of technology? I mean, that comes up a bit, you know, jumping feet first into the Mogwai and not understanding what they're all about before, you know, it's too late. Are we talking about how scary the holidays can be? I mean, what's going on?
For the
economy. For the record, Phoebe Cates makes reference that suicide rates go up during holidays. As somebody who has, for the last 5 years, had to know this kind of thing, that's incorrect. Suicide rates are actually really low during the holidays, fun fact. Mm. That is a common misconception. And, I have to take every opportunity I can to correct someone. So, steamrolling right over that. Finally come down.
There is that.
Yeah, there is that.
As we all know.
It was the scene in the bar where it dawned on me, really, that I think what's going on most is that the gremlins are id. They're just like this complete disregard for what you're supposed to do and just doing what you want to do. The gremlins kill the mean old lady instead of putting up with her like Billy does. The gremlins chain smoke and drink and play poker and shoot each other at random in the bar because they can. They just kind of go about and do whatever they feel like doing because it seems amusing to them. They aren't actually, I mean, they're awful. Don't get me wrong, they're killing people. But they're not particularly malicious at the same time. They're more mischievous. And I think that kind of speaks to what they're all about. Did anybody else find it interesting that Mother's first reaction was to kill the gremlins before they'd done anything to her, by the way?
No.
She puts that gremlin in the bread spinner or whatever the heck that thing was before any of them have done anything to her.
Well, it's that way she could do the slasher trope and pull the kitchen knife out. That was the purpose of the scene.
It was prior to that, though. She pulls the kitchen knife out because she's scared. Slasher trope, obviously. She comes back into the kitchen and the gremlins are in there being gremlins. They haven't attacked her. They haven't done her any harm. She puts that gremlin right in the bread spinner. Again, whatever that thing was, and blunders him to death.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything to her. Except for look gross. They
yeah.
were cute earlier.
They threw plates at her after
she has murdered them. After the human race has declared war on the gremlins go out and I just realized
well,
that
maybe,
as we were talking.
Maybe she deserved to die. And as a matter of fact, an earlier version of the script, a much darker R-rated version of
really?
The script, had her dying in the scene and her head
mm-hmm.
bouncing down the stairs.
Hilarious.
Hilarious, really?
Well, assuming it fit with the tone of the rest of this film.
I'm just saying, I'm usually against these kind of things. I wouldn't mind seeing the R-rated remake of this film.
I actually think this is a film that...
With a true tone that it's really wanting to
show. You know, I think a remake has its place, and it's when a film can be improved upon. And I think Gremlins is a film that can be improved upon, not only with modern technology, but a modern pop culture savviness that we have now. I think this film has potential to be much more successful today than it was then.
Give it to Edgar Wright. Give it to Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright?
Oh, give it to Edgar Wright. Yeah, definitely. Oh, man, Edgar Wright can make an awesome Gremlins
remake.
It'll
be fun.
I'm not saying go out and remake Gremlins, because don't. But if you did, I think this is one that a remake could actually potentially be kind of successful. But again, just kind of circling back and wrapping up my thoughts, I really... Gizmo abstains from eating after midnight because Gizmo thinks about the consequences of his actions. Gizmo realizes Gizmo's voiced by Howie Mandel.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys know that? That's weird.
That is weird.
That is weird.
But Gizmo is offered a piece of chicken, knowing it's after midnight, says,
No, thank you, Billy. I will pass. He didn't say that, but that was the gist of it.
Yeah.
And so Gizmo, being the forward-thinking person that he is, restrains his impulses and doesn't just act without thinking, whereas the more rambunctious gremlins act without thinking and then continue to act without thinking throughout the rest of the film until they finally meet their demise. I did think it was, one final note, I did find Billy interesting as a character because he's something we don't see at all in film lately, and that is a nerdy character who isn't a complete ineffectual man-child. He is a comic book illustrator, aspiring anyway, and watches old sci-fi films, but he's not a dork. No. He asks a girl out on a date because, you know, he just does.
Right.
He doesn't fumble about with it. He, you know, he's not a weirdo. He just
holds out a job. Yeah.
He's got a job. Yeah, he's got a dog that seems to completely comprehend the human language, but that was weird. That bothered me.
Scooby-Doo.
There were things in this film that bothered me. Just kind of random
things.
What,
Lassie? Timmy's in the well?
Also, did you notice that everyone was really okay with this creature they'd never seen before?
Gizmo?
They were just okay with Gizmo's existence. Like, they had no problem with it at all. Billy pulls Gizmo out of his backpack at the police station. They're like, well, that's cool. Still don't believe in little green men, though. What the hell is wrong with you people? You've never seen this thing before. Why are you so okay with it? I don't know. Just there were little weird things like that throughout this movie that kind of bothered me. But
that's fair.
You know, that's what little analysis I think there is to take out of this film.
When I think, you know, as far as analysis goes, it is fairly thin, you know.
And I'm not saying it's real thick, but I'm just thinking there is some of that subtext running throughout the latter portion of this film.
Well, and there's a slight economic subtext working on there. Definitely. About the whole import-export issues, obviously.
Oh, his...
Mr. Futterman.
I actually have something written about his fear of foreigners in here, in my notes.
And so just something that's going on there. There's not a whole lot there. Again, no. I mean, they don't take advantage of what genre film is all about.
Exactly.
And which is too bad, but yet it's a very fun movie. Let's go ahead and move on to our thumbs up, thumbs down, shelf, trash, else, or instead. I ask you, Mr. Arthur Gordon.
Whew. Man, this is a tough one. I'm going to take the cop-out answer. Put it on somebody else's shelf and just watch it when you need it. I actually have it on my shelf, I'll admit, because I picked it up. I found it so I could watch it for this. And I just went ahead and bought it because it's kind of hard to come by sometimes. And so, but yeah, I mean, this is one I think we talked about Die Hard, I think. Just bust it out every few years and watch it around Christmas with the family. And let them grow up and then realize what they've been watching for however many years.
How awful it was.
How awful their parents were in hindsight.
To allow this to happen.
Yeah.
Mr. Dalton Stewart. Oh, wait. Else or instead?
Ooh. To watch, you know, maybe instead of Gremlins or just along with Gremlins, some of those same movies that they're quoting, I'm going to say Wizard of Oz to see the original Mrs. Deagle, if you've never seen it. But also Aliens and maybe even Texas Chainsaw Massacre. There's a back-to-back with Gremlins you should catch.
That sounds like a really crazy double bill.
So, that's what I've got for you.
Mr. Dalton Stewart, shelf or trash, else or instead?
You know, Dustin, I almost kind of want to take the cop-out answer like Arthur did. I also had to put it on my shelf for the purposes of the podcast because the film was not streaming. This film was actually kind of difficult to come by. I had to get it on Blu-ray, which I, you know, normally don't go out of my way to do. I could not find it on...
Maybe he'll trade you.
I might just give it to you, yeah. Because that's what I was about to say. I plan on re-gifting this for a game of Dirty Santa next week. So that's my answer. I have it on my shelf and really have no urge to keep it there. I don't think it's... I think it's a film you should watch, definitely. I think it's a fun film. I don't think you should be in any hurry to add it to your collection, though. It comes on TV during the holidays quite a bit. I mean, it is surprisingly hard to come across, though. I will say that. I can't believe how much difficulty I had. I could not find it on DVD.
No. I went to four different stores and found one copy at a vintage stock on the north side. So
not an easy film to come by. So maybe if only for that reason, in terms of purely how difficult it seems to be to come across, you might want to get it. But honestly, I wouldn't be that big a hurry to do so. Else recommended for companion viewing, I would say you should watch Slither. Definitely a much darker film, and maybe even... the R-rated version of Gremlins, really. Slither, also a horror comedy set in a small town, definitely plays more with the zombie genre than the movie monster genre. But some similar things going on in terms of violence and comedy interplaying with one another and fun.
It's not a movie
tropes.
I know, so.
Slither, yeah. Really. Directed by James Gunn. Mm-hmm. Written by him as well, I believe. Starring Nathan Fillion from 2005, I want to say.
Is the cover somebody in a
bathtub?
Bathtub. Okay,
yeah.
I've seen it on Netflix then.
I know.
I think that might be good trash, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, there you go. I'm going to say, put it on the shelf. It's already been on my shelf.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is a movie I really like. Again, does it mean anything? Not so much. But this is one of those great movies to break out, as you guys mentioned earlier, at parties. You've got people over. They've been over a while. You want to watch a movie. It's got the nostalgia factor. It's got the fun factor. It's got the just, you know, crazy references factor. Because it is such a mishmash of so many other films, there's just a lot of fun in watching it.
And you're not going to miss anything if you talk over it.
Absolutely. And so it is a good film for when you've got a lot of people over at the house and they're just staying later and you're sick of playing skip. Skip Bo.
I bet there's a great Gremlins drinking game to be played.
There might indeed be.
Do a shot every time somebody says bright light.
Right.
For starters.
So there's that. I mean, I like this movie a lot. This movie is reminded me and is one of the things that reminds me why I like G.I.O. and Italian horror films so much is because the color scheme is that of Christmas. And that is one of the other references going on in there. The Christmas setting of the film is pretty indifferent. Really, it's not necessary to the context. But I think Joe Dante used it so he could make a G.I.O. film. So he could use all that Dario Argento / Mario Bava, red, green, and blue lighting and use it throughout the film in a way that somehow made sense. And visually, I find it fun and therefore would put it on my shelf. What else are instead? Else you could watch one of the 100 movies that it references. You could watch The Blob, Forbidden Planet. You could watch, so there's a whole lot of movies, I would say, else to watch. Of them that it refers to, I would add the best one to add to watch else. I'd probably go with The Blob. It's one I like a lot. The original with Stephen McQueen, not Steve, mind you. But The Blob is fun. It does its special effects well, yet at times it's dated, as we see with the thriller scene of the gremlins coming down the street, which is a bit dated. Other than that, mostly holds up. And
it actually holds the special effects all fairly well in this film, I think.
Well, yeah.
For the most part.
All right. Well, let's play our game, which is your favorite monster horde film, where those monsters came after you. Dear listener, we always want to hear your ideas as well. I begin with you, Mr. Arthur Gordon. What is your favorite monster horde?
Ooh, I think some of my favorite monster movie hordes, I'm going to go with Aliens, I think. I just kind of thought of this. Aliens, the James Cameron, the sequel, with the Marines, and they're all getting hunted by the alien horde. But also... 30 Days of Night. I love those vicious, vicious, vicious vampires in all their true vampire glory slaughtering people in Alaska or wherever they may be.
Excellent. Excellent choice, sir. Mr. Dalton Stewart, your favorite movie monster hordes?
Arthur Gordon actually had the exact same answer that I did.
Really?
A loving nod to Aliens. I didn't want to... It was part of my pick last week, though, or a couple weeks ago for Die Hard, so I didn't want to specifically say Aliens, so I was going to go 30 Days of Night. Not the best film in the world, by any means, but a really interesting army of monsters. The vampires in 30 Days of Night are what vampires should be. They're cold, they're thoughtless, they're violent, they're horrible, and they don't sparkle. 30 Days of Night is a fun movie, by the way. If you haven't checked that out, I really, really highly recommend you get around to doing that. I would also like to talk about Aliens. That is a film I love so very much. I consistently would put Aliens in some of my favorite movies of all time. I think it's that good. I think it's probably one of the last great films James Cameron made. So definitely check that movie out if you haven't. It's just fun. I really like the idea of putting the macho action people up against something scary. I think it's a really interesting interplay anytime that happens.
Excellent, excellent. Well, monster hordes, I mean, there's lots of them.
Oh, there's tons.
Obviously, we all heart zombies, and so those references are all, you know, naturally assumed as we move on. I'm going to name two kind of non-traditional possible films, one of them being Arachnophobia, where the monster horde are mutantites, something that could actually happen. Spiders that have mated and crossbred in a way, and they can actually kill an entire small town worth of people.
It's a terrible movie.
It's a lot of fun, though. John Goodman's in it. And
is he really?
He's the bug exterminator, and he is bad.
Don't even remember.
And I like that a lot, and I recommend them. I think it's a fun movie. Another one I'm going to recommend is a favorite monster horde, as far as just a single scene of this monster horde occurring. Is the Burly Battle of all the Agent Smiths versus Neo.
Good answer.
In The Matrix Reloaded. I really, really love that particular horde of monsters. And then I guess it continues on into Revolutions. And that particular battle with Neo and the Pole is just fantastic.
It's pretty cool. There's a weird sound effects cue, though, where he knocks one Smith into a bunch of other Smiths, and there's the sound of a bowling ball hitting bowling pins.
I know. Does not make it more awesome?
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we start to see the slip from one. Because the first half of Matrix Reloaded is pretty outstanding. If you haven't watched Matrix Reloaded and just been saying it's terrible because the internet tells you that for the last 10 years, go ahead and revisit it, because it's actually pretty, it holds up much better than you remember, I'd say. I will agree, Dustin.
I agree.
I think that's a great pick, Dustin, I really do.
Well, thank you, sir. Well, all right. Well, there's our favorite movie monster hordes. Dear listener, what are your favorite hordes of monsters? What would be the one that you would most like to see on the screen? What would be the, perhaps, set of monsters you would most want to face, or perhaps most not want to face? I want to go ahead and ask our esteemed crew here a random question. Which monster horde would you most wish to face in all of moviedom, and which one would you least wish to face? Mr. Dalton Stewart.
Oh, God. From the ones we listed, I'd definitely like to go up against those spiders.
The spiders?
They're spiders. You know what? I also wouldn't mind going up against the gremlins. You know
they could
why?
All be up in your house and you'd never know.
You know why I also wouldn't mind up going up against the gremlins? Because the gremlins. See Chucky and the leprechaun for similar answers. Nothing that's 3 feet tall is that terrifying. I'm sorry. If I can punt you across the room, come at me, bro. In terms of things I would rather not like to see, definitely the aliens. It bleeds acid, first of all. It is a stealthy piece of steel teeth and claws and tails and cocoons and Freudian imagery. That's just something I don't need in my day. I also
or any day
or any day or anyone's day. I also would definitely rather not go up against Agent Smith because I do not know Kung Fu.
You do not.
I do not. I'd like to. Listener, if you want to teach me Kung Fu, please do so.
Mr. Arthur Gordon, the horde you most would wish to face and least would wish to face.
The horde I think I could handle the best is from a little movie called Fantasia, and it is a horde of broomsticks.
You got that, huh?
I think I could handle it. I would make them clean my house day in and day out, and I think I could handle that.
A little fire probably. Scarecrow, and they'll be, you know, out of your way anyway, right?
They are under control. Oh,
yeah. That was, I'm sorry. That was a silent full body laugh for me. That kind of evolved into a real like hearty chuckle. I'm just picturing Arthur's manhandling a bunch of brooms, and it's pretty great.
Oh, guys, I got this.
If you're not laughing right now, you're dead inside. I want you to know that you're not picturing it.
But I'm gonna copycat myself. I wouldn't want to face those vampires from 30 Days of Night.
Absolutely.
Or the aliens.
No,
I would. Yeah,
terrifying.
No, I'm better off at home.
You saw 30 Days of Night. There's a scene where they're hiding in an attic like they're Anne Frank. It's terrifying. Those vampires.
Like they're Anne Frank.
Have you seen the movie? It's very reminiscent of a Holocaust film at one point. There's a solid 20 minutes where they go from basement to attic just hiding and being real quiet. Those vampires led by Danny Houston are horrifying.
Yeah, they are.
Good. Have you seen that movie?
No.
Oh, man. If I own it,
I can let it borrow you. I've got it, I think.
You should let him borrow it, because it's really good.
He'll probably hate it.
It's a solid film.
He'll probably
put
it up there with the faculty.
He probably will. Not Ethan Hawke.
Well, that would
what's
not
his face,
help
isn't it?
Josh.
Josh.
American Beauty.
Bag Boy. American Beauty.
Sin City.
Josh Hartnett.
There we go.
Josh Hartnett's in it.
Oh, just, yeah.
So you probably hate it.
I don't know. I might not. I like vampires. So there's that.
It's good. Dustin,
What's your answer?
The set of monsters that I would be most prepared to handle are zombies. Because
that's doable.
I think I got that.
We are talking Night of the Living Dead, not 28 Days Later.
Yes, we are we're talking Romero zombies. I do not wish to face.
Good God, no.
28 Days Later zombies.
An army of distance runners coming at you is
but
scary.
But Romero
when
zombies, I think I could plot and plan. I could initially handle the initial outbreak and then sustain a siege in which we were able to survive. So
it's the bandits and the lack of sewage removal you really have to worry about.
The one set of monsters I would least wish to face are the Tooth Fairies from Hellboy 2. I don't want that at all happening.
Oh, God, I forgot about them.
That does not need to be happening anywhere in my presence.
Not up in here.
Because, yeah, that's just really not good.
Really, any monster from a Guillermo del Toro film is to be avoided at all costs.
Yes.
That's a fair statement. All right, dear listener, let us know what you think as well. Well, let's just move on and do what we always do. Let's talk about what's got us fired up this week in pop culture. I begin to my left. Mr. Arthur Gordon, are you fired up this week?
A little bit. Let's see what we can talk about. Well, today I finally started the second episode of The Walking Dead. I tried to start this show back in March. I watched the pilot, and I could not get in a rhythm to finally keep watching it. Today I started the second episode. I got 20 minutes in and things came up. I don't know if the fates want me to watch this show. I want to watch this show, but I need to get a rhythm so that I can watch this show, because the second episode was pretty good and I was getting invested in it.
Can I make a recommendation, Arthur, if you don't mind? As a longtime reader of the Walking Dead comics and a longtime watcher of the show, stick with season 2. You're going to be tempted to just skip it. Season 3 is great. Believe the hype. It's good. Season 2 is a slog.
Are you saying just hold in there?
Hold in there. I think in marathon format, season 2 will work a lot better. The pacing of season 2 is really painful.
Okay.
In a weekly serial. I had some issues with season 2 that are well documented. But if you stick with it, if you power through some of the slow points of season 2, I think it'll make for an enjoyable viewing experience.
I will be a better man for it.
Ditto and agreed.
Okay. I did finish American Horror Story. It was pretty quick. I tore that up. Let's see what else. Man, it's been... I've kind of fallen off the grid while these two jokers cover their mouths. I saw The Hobbit. It was meh. Is that fair?
Did we talk about that on the Hebrew Hammer episode? Your feelings?
No, we were anticipating.
That's right.
I was going to see.
Well, Arthur, tell us what you thought about The Hobbit, because I haven't seen it.
As I wrote in my review, I feel that Mr. Jackson did some arrogant direction in filmmaking with The Hobbit, took the Lucas approach to try and just keep furthering and perfecting his vision of Lord of the Rings. And this was Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, presented by Peter Jackson. And I saw more landscape shots of New Zealand, which could have easily been replaced by the Fellowship running through the hills. But we got the Band of Dwarves running through the hills. And we had all those wonderful things that, if you're not a fan of all things Tolkien, you're probably not going to care about. And there are some great scenes, and Martin Freeman steals the show. And the Reels in the Dark segment with Gollum is incredible. But overall, I think for the average fan, this movie is going to be meh at best.
I'll jump in. The only thing I've got that's got me fired up this week in pop culture is The Hobbit. And what I mostly agree. I would say that. What I would say is that we saw the extended version in the theatrical release. That's the problem, is that the theatrical release is what should have been the extended version for the
DVD.
The devoted fan, the Tolkien head. It's really a two-hour film, not a two-hour, 50-minute film. And I don't know that it's arrogant direction so much, because, he is connecting the dots. He is doing some of the things that Tolkien was doing as he was writing all these appendices at the end of Return of the King to make sure that it all would work in.
Trying to connect his children's story to his story about the tragedy of war.
Right. And there's a major revision of the Riddles in the Dark from the original version based on making it seamlessly fit into the narrative of the Lords of the Rings. And so I think in a way Jackson is being very faithful to Tolkien. He's adding bits, and there's bits of dramatic stuff that has to happen for cinema, and I'm fine with all of that. But in the end, I have to say that The Hobbit's is kind of a for fans only movie. I would figure it would be tiresome for anybody else. Mm-hmm. To work their way through. And so that I find to be mistaken, because I think one of the great things Jackson has done has introduced there are two places I want to go when I die, and I want to go to Middle Earth first and then die and go to heaven. That's just the kind of nerd I am. I love me some Middle Earth. But what Jackson did with The Lord of the Rings was make Middle Earth accessible to the non-specialists, the people who cannot slog through somewhat difficult novels, and introduce that world to a much wider population. What I'm a-fearing he's doing with... I'm a-fearing
awesome.
He's doing
awesome.
With The
Continue.
Hobbit is that he is closing it back down with the most successful work of the of anything Tolkien's written, mm-hmm. which is The Hobbit, and I find that unfortunate.
That is problematic to kind of do the big... and that's the problem with prequels in general, but I think, from what I know, as a... not somebody who's a diehard Tolkien head, by any means, you guys are really dissuading me from seeing this film. I gotta tell you that. I'll probably still catch it eventually, but you're really talking me out of something I didn't have much urge to see to begin with, so thanks. But I think that's dramatically problematic, mm-hmm. is to take the more complex, more interesting story, and then do that first. They did that first because it's the more interesting story. It makes a better movie, probably. I think dramatically that's kind of problematic, is to go back. Which is a problem for prequels in general. Right. It's a problem I have with the Star Wars prequels.
I don't think it's Star Wars, though. I don't think it's that level of... I don't think he is maligning the initial work. I don't think he's in any way completely
upsetting
the
saying,
apple cart.
I don't think you're saying that. I just think, in terms of dramatically speaking... you were saying that, though, Arthur. Really? Okay. Wow, you think it's that bad, huh?
I disagree to that extent, because I don't think Radagast is Jar Jar. Radagast is in the book.
Isn't he in the Lord of the Rings, though?
No.
I thought he was transposed. Really. I don't know. I don't know a lot.
I don't think he's in the movies, is he? The Brown Wizard, is that who you're talking
about?
Yeah. Oh, is he in the
movies? No, I mean the books, the novels. I
don't think he's in the novels. I think he's only in the
Hobbit. I remember hearing him referenced as a character.
Is he in Appendices?
He could be.
I remember hearing him referenced as a character that was thankfully cut from the Lord of the Rings films, because it was so weird,
Tom Bombadil.
That's who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Again, you're talking to the uninitiated here.
I know the difference between a Noldor and a Sindar elf. I'm...
Do you guys want to play D&D?
No.
Level 24 mage.
Dang it, I thought I'd finally found some people to play D&D with me.
I've never was into that. The 12-sided die, I do not own them.
I'm not either, but I want to be.
You want to be?
I want to be so badly. Listeners.
I like the video game versions of that kind of stuff. I'll play that
stuff. That's actually something I'm excited about.
I'll play the stew out of that. Well, let's go on to that, because that's all I got
that I'm fired up about. Well, I will make this brief prologue into what I'm about to say. Dear listener. Listeners, plural. I like to think we have more than one listener.
At least we have Brigham and Nathan.
We have Brigham and Nathan.
And we love Brigham and Nathan.
Because they give us feedback and information. I'll just stick with listener. I'll go with the royal we. Dear listener, if any of you know how to play D&D, I would love to be initiated. It's something I've wanted to try for a really long time. I think it looks like a lot of fun. Especially after finishing Freaks and Geeks, it's something I want to do more and more every day. And part of what I'm fired up in this week in pop culture is the re-release of Baldur's Gate, the Enhanced Edition. It's an awesome game that I have fond memories of. It is from BioWare, the makers of things you might be familiar with, like Mass Effect series, Dragon Age series. They made a game way back in 1998, based completely around D&D's, one of their campaigns, and using their second edition rules as the game engine. The things we love about RPGs these days that have actual storytelling to them were started, really, the hardcore storytelling that we love and character development that we love from role-playing games today started back with them in 1998. I haven't played this game yet. It came out a couple weeks ago. I'm just really excited that it exists. and I'm probably going to go ahead and buy it. So, Dustin, since you just mentioned you like those things in video game form, that's something you might want to check out.
Okay.
I'm also excited. As came up a few episodes ago, I dove headlong into The Wire. I have finished The Wire now. If anything, I have now developed an alcohol addiction and a desire to chase criminals, if only to prove I'm smarter than them. The Wire is fantastic. Again, I mentioned this the first time I talked about this on the show. I know it's hack to say, The Wire is so great. It's because it's so great. Like, I can't even... Listener, I can't overstate to you how good The Wire is.
The populace is right.
The populace is... Well, I mean, if the populace was right, more people would watch a show when it was on, I guess. Because it's one of those shows you always hear about how great it is, and it's so difficult to find anyone who's ever actually watched it. I talked to maybe two people that have watched it before when I started watching it. Guys, I really enjoy the show a lot. I know, again, it's gotten to the point of being annoying over the last almost decade the show's been around. But it's wonderful. It really tells a complicated story in a way that I think only television can. I think it does what television is most well suited towards, which is almost telling a very novel-like story. All these branching themes and plots that are kind of woven together in ways that are both interesting both dramatically and thematically. So I think it is a show that you should all strongly consider buying or finding to watch. Moving on, I'm excited about the Christmas releases. It's kind of a thin slate this year in terms of what's coming. Christmas releases as in film releases.
Right.
Obviously, the big one being Django Unchained. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. Also, Les Mis. You know,
I'm excited to see Les Mis.
I kind of want
to
see Les Mis. I'm getting less excited than I was when I saw the first trailer.
The 7-minute movie trailer?
No, not that one. I don't like those. I don't like those short film trailers that they have started doing. That's weird. iTunes, quit making me watch those.
You have a will.
Well, quit putting them in my face, rather, I guess. No, I don't, Dustin. I have no willpower. We just talked about this. I watched The Wire, now I want to be an alcoholic.
That's why you identify the id in the Gremlins. I see.
I think that's what it was. I just found out how long Les Mis actually is, and I don't know if I want to sit through that much of a movie musical.
Well, there
how
long is that?
Well, it's like 3 hours. It's close to it. So it's 3 hours, and the early reviews have been less than glowing.
Oh.
So I just don't want to sit through a 3-hour-long bad movie. But I hold out hope, because it really does look pretty good. So, it looks pretty, it looks showy, and...
I want to give a year-end award with regard to Les Miserables.
Why is that?
The single bravest actor slash actress in 2012 is Anne Hathaway.
I thought you were going to say Russell Crowe, go on.
No, is Anne Hathaway, because she took on playing the Catwoman role,
mm-hmm.
which is a scary place to be,
mm-hmm.
and blows it out of the water. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how she does it in Les Mis, but she's asking for all the nerd wrath possible.
And those musical theater nerds, if you think comic book nerds are bad, those musical theater nerds will kill you.
And I just want to say that I have a lot of respect for Anne Hathaway for choosing and accepting a couple roles that really could be career enders. And Les Mis may be bad. I have no idea. But the fact that she's got the guts to go ahead and step up and do it.
Take a much loved role. And
I have to say, my hat comes off to you, ma'am.
And it may be one of those movies where, you know, the parts outshine the whole. You know, she's already getting the acting buzz, and she'll probably win some awards. And so, you know,
you shave your head on camera and everybody thinks it's a big deal.
Unless you're Demi Moore.
Yeah. God, nobody remembers that movie.
Meh.
In all seriousness, I agree, doesn't she's definitely made a...
The old man grumbles.
Anne Hathaway is definitely making some bold choices, and I salute you.
I'm interested to go see the Jack Reacher movie, Tom Cruise's new movie.
I have no interest in that film whatsoever.
I don't know. I like the new Mission Impossible. I'm going to give him a chance.
Did I talk about this on the show already? How? Maybe I didn't. Why do I need to know? Why should I know who Jack Reacher is?
He's Jack Reacher.
Why should I know who Alex Cross is? Why should I know who John Carter is? You know what the problem with these three films are? They don't have a title. They have a name. A name that apparently...
nobody knows.
I'm supposed to know who this person is because apparently I read 100-year-old science fiction novels and airport novels. Come on, guys. You're not doing a good job. Market your damn film. Jack Reacher.
That's just really annoying. Jack Reacher.
Go ahead. No, don't listen. Don't listen, Hollywood. Don't market it. That way I don't have to see it.
Good.
Thank you.
I keep wanting to call him Jack Creature.
Right.
Instead of Jack Reacher.
Well, his sidekick is Dobby from Harry Potter. Now that's a film I'd see.
Dustin? Oh, that's a $1 million idea. I would watch the shit out of an action movie starring Tom Cruise and Dobby from Harry Potter. Do you have any idea how hard I would watch that movie? Hollywood, take my money. Give me Tom Cruise and Dobby fighting crime, please.
And absolutely, you know, this Dobby's a fool! Right before he tearfully dies, oh, saving the hero. It would be so great.
I would watch that movie on repeat all day long. That movie will have all of my money and all of my adoration. Because I want to see Dobby slide under a table while firing two handguns. Are you picturing it? Because if you're not, and you're not laughing, you have no soul, as we've covered. Oh, man.
Excellent, excellent.
Beautiful.
Wow. Excellent, guys. Well, that's a lot of stuff to be fired up about this week.
That's a lot to be fired up about.
In pop culture. Next week, dear listener, we have a special for you. We are going to do the Quentin Tarantino retrospective. We are going to do Jackie Brown as our film of analysis, and there will be an additional bonus episode. Yes, dear listener, the UCO Film Society, we are going to the cinema. We're going to go to the talkies, and we're going to see us in Django Unchained, and we're going to give you a quick, just immediate, raw analysis and review of Django Unchained directly after having
seen... Straight from the horse's mouth.
Straight after having seen the film. Should be loads of fun and a bonus episode for you all because it's Christmas.
It's the season of giving.
And that's what we like to do.
I do want to make the pitch right now on the air. I think our game for Jackie Brown should be favorite Quentin Tarantino scene.
I think that's fair.
Not even film, scene. You like it? You in?
I already got one. I'm in.
Let's do it.
All right, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
So, well, yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun, and that's a good line. And so we will see you all next time as we do that. And, listener, we want to say to you, as we are approaching this being our holiday episode right before the feast that's coming up, which is Christmas, we want to say to you all, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, whatever it is that you celebrate. We pray that you celebrate it with somebody you know and you love. Maybe you watch a movie.
Or maybe celebrate it with a total stranger. That's fun, too.
Absolutely.
Make some new friends while watching a movie.
While watching a movie. Go to a movie with somebody and talk about it afterward, or get a whole lot of people you don't know so well and talk about a movie while you watch it at your home. It's a lot of fun.
Dustin, what should the listener do if they want to talk to us about a movie, though?
You know what? They should check it out with social media.
What kind of social media?
Like Twitter.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What's that like?
I don't know.
Dear listener, if you have the desire to talk to us here at the Good Trash Genre Cast, you can reach us on the Twitter at good_trash.
Also, I believe there's another medium that is quite popular. It's, I think, the third most populous country in the world, actually.
I think it is. I think it's a sovereign nation.
And I will be running for their president. I am talking about www.facebook.com/goodtrashgenrecast.
Thank you, sir. Also, we are available at http://goodtrashgenrecast.tumblr.com. And you can find us all there. And you can also talk to us individually on Twitter. I'm at Dustin_Sells, S-E-L-L-S. Mr. Dalton Stewart, where are you at?
I am at Dalton Stewart, U-A. None of that E-W bullcrap like Martha Stewart does.
And Mr. Arthur Gordon.
You can find me at RNDTBLReview.
Excellent, excellent. We want to keep the conversation going. So, dear listener, these holiday season, we pray and again and hope that you would all get out, see a movie. There's a lot of good trash out there. You don't have to wait for some amazing work of art, something crazy and difficult. You can actually look at a movie that's just good popcorn fare and have a pretty fun conversation. If this episode demonstrates anything, I believe it demonstrates just that. So get out there, look at that good trash, and we'll see you next time.
I really want to see that movie, though.
Dobby sliding under a table, firing two handguns, right?
Just diving through the air.